Chapter 61. Mrs. Torrington says so. I asked particularly who he was, and she told me that his mother was some foreigner of high rank. His mother? Said Gwendolyn, rather sharply. Then who was his father? Well, everyone says he is the son of Sir Hugo Malinger, who brought him up, though he passes for a ward. She says, if Sir Hugo Malinger could have done as he liked with his estates, he would have left them to this Mr. Deronda, since he has no legitimate son. Gwendolyn was silent, but her mother observed so marked an effect in her face that she was angry with herself for having repeated Mrs. Torrington's gossip. It seemed, on reflection, unsuited to the ear of her daughter, for whom Mrs. Davilow disliked what is called knowledge of the world, and indeed she wished that she herself had not had any of it thrust upon her. An image which had immediately arisen in Gwendolyn's mind was that of the unknown mother, no doubt a dark-eyed woman, probably sad. Hardly any face could be less like Deronda's than that represented as Sir Hugo's in a crayon portrait at Diplow. A dark-eyed woman, no longer young, had become stuff o' the conscience to Gwendolyn. That night when S.E. had got into her little bed, and only a dim light was burning, she said, Mama, have men generally children before they are married? No, dear, no, said Mrs. Davilow. Why do you ask such a question? But she began to think that she saw the why. If it were so, I ought to know, said Gwendolyn, with some indignation. You are thinking of what I said about Mr. Deronda and Sir Hugo Malinger. That is a very unusual case, dear. Does Lady Malinger know? She knows enough to satisfy her. That is quite clear, because Mr. Deronda has lived with them. And people think no worse of him? Well, of course he is under some disadvantage. It is not as if he were Lady Malinger's son. He does not inherit the property, and he is not of any consequence in the world. But people are not obliged to know anything about his birth. You see, he is very well received. I wonder whether he knows about it, and whether he is angry with his father? My dear child, why should you think of that? Why? Said Gwendolyn, impetuously, sitting up in her bed. Haven't children reason to be angry with their parents? How can they help their parents marrying or not marrying? But a consciousness rushed upon her, which made her fall back again on her pillow. It was not only what she would have felt months before, that she might seem to be reproaching her mother for that second marriage of hers. What she chiefly felt now was that as he had been led on to a condemnation which seemed to make her own marriage a forbidden thing. There was no further talk, and till sleep came over her, Gwendolyn lay struggling with the reasons against that marriage, reasons which pressed upon her newly now that they were unexpectedly mirrored in the story of a man whose slight relations with her had, by some hidden affinity, bitten themselves into the most permanent layers of feeling. It was characteristic that, with all her debating, she was never troubled by the question whether the indefensibleness of her marriage did not include the fact that as he had accepted Grandcourt solely as a man whom it was convenient for her to marry, not in the least as one to whom she would be binding herself in duty. Gwendolyn's ideas were pitiably crude. But many grand difficulties of life are apt to force themselves on us in our crudity. And to judge wisely, I suppose we must know how things appear to the unwise, that kind of appearance making the larger part of the world's history. In the morning there was a double excitement for her. She was going to hunt, from which scruples about propriety had threatened to hinder her, until it was found that Mrs. Torrington was horsewoman enough to accompany her going to hunt for the first time since her escapade with Rex. And she was going again to see Deronda, in whom, since last night, her interest had so gathered that she expected, as people do about revealed celebrities, to see something in his appearance which as he had missed before. What was he going to be? What sort of life had he before him, he being nothing of any consequence? and with only a little difference in events he might have been as important as Grand Court. Nay, her imagination inevitably went into that direction might have held the various states which Grand Court was to have. But now, Deronda would probably someday see her mistress of the Abbey atopping, see her bearing the title which would have been his own wife's. These obvious, feudal thoughts of what might have been made a new epoch for Gwendolyn. She, whose unquestionable habit it had been to take the best that came to her for less than her own claim, had now to see the position which tempted her in a new light, as a hard, unfair exclusion of others. What as he had now heard about Deronda seemed to her imagination to throw him into one group with Mrs. Glasher and her children, before whom she felt herself in an attitude of apology, she who had hitherto been surrounded by a group that in her opinion had need be apologetic to her. Perhaps Deronda himself was thinking of these things. Could he know of Mrs. Glasher? If he knew that she knew, he would despise her, but he could have no such knowledge. Would he, without that, despise her for marrying Grand Court? His possible judgment of her actions was telling on her as importunately as Klesmer's judgment of her powers, but she found larger room for resistance to a disapproval of her marriage, because it is easier to make our conduct seem justifiable to ourselves than to make our ability strike others. How can I help it? Is not our favorite apology for incompetency. But Gwendolyn felt some strength in saying, how can I help what other people have done? Things would not come right if I were to turn round now and declare that I would not marry Mr. Grand Court. And such turning round was out of the question. The horses in the chariot as he had mounted were going at full speed. This mood of youthful, elated desperation had a tidal recurrence. She could dare anything that lay before her sooner than she could choose to go backward into humiliation, and it was even soothing to think that there would now be as much ill-doing in the one as in the other. But the immediate delightful fact was the hunt, where she would see Deronda, and where he would see her, for always lurking ready to obtrude before other thoughts about him was the impression that he was very much interested in her. But today she was resolved not to repeat her folly of yesterday, as if she were anxious to say anything to him. Indeed, the hunt would be too absorbing. And so it was for a long while. Deronda was there, and within her sight very often, but this only added to the stimulus of a pleasure which Gwendolyn had only once before tasted, and which seemed likely always to give a delight independent of any crosses, except such as took away the chance of riding. No accident happened to throw them together. The run took them within convenient reach of home, and the agreeable somberness of the gray November afternoon, with a long stratum of yellow light in the west, Gwendolyn was returning with the company from Diplow, who were attending her on the way to Offenden. Now the sense of glorious excitement was over and gone. She was getting irritably disappointed that as he had had no opportunity of speaking to Deronda, whom she would not see again, since he was to go away in a couple of days. What was she going to say? That was not quite certain. She wanted to speak to him. Grand Court was by her side. Mrs. Torrington, her husband, and another gentleman in advance, and Deronda's horse she could hear behind. The wish to speak to him, and have him speaking to her was becoming imperious, and there was no chance of it, unless she simply asserted her will and defied everything. Where the order of things could give way to Miss Gwendolyn, it must be made to do so. They had lately emerged from a wood of pines and beeches, where the twilight stillness had a repressing effect, which increased her impatience. The horse hoofs again heard behind at some little distance were a growing irritation. She reined in her horse and looked behind her. Grand Court, after a few paces, also paused. But she, waving her whip and nodding sideways with playful imperiousness, said, "Go on. I want to speak to Mr. Deronda." Grand Court hesitated. But that he would have done after any proposition. It was an awkward situation for him. No gentleman, before marriage, could give the emphasis of refusal to a command delivered in this playful way. He rode on slowly, and she waited till Deronda came up. He looked at her with tacit inquiry, and she said at once, letting her horse go alongside of his, "Mr. Deronda, you must enlighten my ignorance. I want to know why you thought it wrong for me to gamble. Is it because I am a woman?" "Not altogether, but I regretted it the more, because you were a woman," said Deronda, with an irrepressible smile. Apparently it must be understood between them now that it was he who sent the necklace. I think it would be better for men not to gamble. It is a besotting kind of taste, likely to turn into a disease. And, besides, there is something revolting to me in raking a heap of money together, and internally chuckling over it, when others are feeling the loss of it. I should even call it base, if it were more than an exceptional lapse. There are enough inevitable turns of fortune which force us to see that our gain is another's loss. That is one of the ugly aspects of life. One would like to reduce it as much as one could, not get amusement out of exaggerating it. Deronda's voice had gathered some indignation while he was speaking. "But you do admit that we can't help things," said Gwendolyn, with a drop in her tone. The answer had not been anything like what he had expected. "I mean that things are so in spite of us. We can't always help it, that our gain is another's loss. Clearly. Because of that, we should help it where we can." Gwendolyn, biting her lip inside, paused a moment, and then forcing herself to speak with an air of playfulness again, said, "But why should you regret it more, because I am a woman? Perhaps because we need that you should be better than we are." "But suppose we need that men should be better than we are," said Gwendolyn with a little air of peck. "That is rather a difficulty," said Deronda, smiling. I suppose I should have said, we each of us think it would be better for the other to be good. You see, I needed you to be better than I was, and you thought so," said Gwendolyn, nodding and laughing, while she put her horse forward and joined Grandcourt, who made no observation. "Don't you want to know what I had to say to Mr. Deronda?" said Gwendolyn, whose own pride required her to account for her conduct. No, said Grandcourt, coldly. "Now that is the first impolite word you have spoken, that you don't wish to hear what I had to say," said Gwendolyn, playing at a pout. "I wish to hear what you say to me, not to other men," said Grandcourt. "Then you wish to hear this." "I wanted to make him tell me why he objected to my gambling, and he gave me a little sermon." "Yes, but excuse me the sermon." If Gwendolyn imagined that Grandcourt cared about her speaking to Deronda, he wished her to understand that she was mistaken. But he was not fond of being told to ride on. She saw he was piqued, but did not mind. As he had accomplished her object of speaking again to Deronda, before he raised his hat and turned with the rest toward Diplo, while her lover attended her to Offenden, where he was to bid farewell before a whole day's absence on the unspecified journey. Grandcourt had spoken truth in calling the journey a bore. He was going by train to Gadsmere. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.